Well, we'll continue our discussion of pointers today. If you recall last time, we finished up here on about slide 316, where we were discussing the new function with the possibility that it would not be able to allocate the memory that you requested from it. And we pointed out that if that was the case, then the language standard at the moment says that new throws an exception. And since we aren't going to handle exceptions in this class, you will learn to do that in the next one, we will instruct the new function not to throw one by passing it the no-throw parameter. And that's defined for us. You may get a warning about that. You can safely really ignore the warning. You can pound include the new library to make sure that it's there if you wish. But that assures us that the new function will return a null if it cannot do the allocation. Now here's an example on the next slide, 317, where we've got this simple little program here to allocate a humongous array. We've got an array of integers, a pointer to an array of integers called mylist, and we're trying to allocate about a 900 meg, maybe, array. Is pretty darn large, 900 million size integer array, and that's going to fail. And we can check that afterwards by just checking to see if the value of the pointer, my list, after that call is equal to null. And if so, we can print out an appropriate error message and return from the function, return from the program, before we would do anything else. There's really very little you can do most of the time when your programs run out of memory. You should always check that, even though there's probably almost no chance of this happening to us in this program, or in the programs that we write in this course, you should always get into a habit of checking for this. You might notice here, though, after that allocation, if we reset the size to be much smaller to where that would be able to allocate it okay, we've got a couple for loops here. This first for loop is actually setting each value in the array equal to its corresponding index, and then it's outputting its corresponding index. It's doing that by using what's called pointer arithmetic, which we're going to study, we're going to look at today. T, which is also an integer pointer, is set equal to my list, the zeroth element of the array that was allocated. And then we set star sub t, which is the array element that it points to, in this case the zeroth array element, we set that equal to count, which starts out being zero, we set it equal to its index. And then we add one to count, and we also add one, we increment t, which actually sets it to the next array location. You can do pointer arithmetic. We'll talk some more about that here in just a moment. First, though, before we do that, let's talk about the different ways of passing pointers. You can pass a pointer the same as a regular variable. You can pass it by value, or you can pass it by reference. There's also a couple other ways we're going to learn that you can pass it. Slight variations on these two ways. If we want to actually be able to change the pointer, rather than what the pointer is pointing to, or both, we can pass the pointer itself by reference. Why might you need to do this? Well, you're going to learn in an advanced course, like maybe the 2604 Data Structures course, you can write programs to organize memory in the type of structures that the human mind organizes memory in. When you learn things, in the human, in your mind, hopefully, you, without sometimes even realizing it, if there are certain relationships between new things that you learned and old things you've learned in the past, your mind will create associations between all of those different related things. The associations even have meaning. But when you sort of form a mental model of how things work, how it relates to other things you know that work, okay? But as you're trying to learn things and you're forming these mental models, what happens quite often is that you realize that mental model that you've formed isn't quite right. There's something wrong with it. You realize you made a slight mistake in your understanding of it, so your mind just resets the model. It reworks the model. It changes it. And it may also, at that point, break connections with other things that it had associated because it realizes, those two models don't really work the same like I thought they worked the same together. And so suddenly you break that one, and maybe you set it over to relate to something else. So you have this very dynamic reorganization of memory that takes place as you're learning. You can form things in... You can form tree, grass-like structures in memory that are self-modifying structures, such that you can give them a command telling them to delete this and reform yourself, rebalance yourself. And at that point, it will, when you maybe delete something and add something else maybe, the structure, all of the structure and all of its connections with pointers will suddenly, because of the algorithms you build into it, will go through, delete the one thing, store something else over here, and reconnect things in different patterns, and suddenly you'll have a structure that looks like this, and you'll tell it to make a change, and you'll end up with an entirely different structure. These self-modifying structures are very powerful. They're fairly complex to program up. We build our way up to them slowly, but they are very powerful. In order to do that, we quite often need to be able to pass the actual pointers in the structure, to be able to change the pointers that are in the structure, the actual pointers to point to something else. Not changing just what it points to, but changing the pointer. In that case, we need to pass the pointer by reference to be able to change the actual pointer. So you can see here we have that little resize code that we talked about previously. And in this case, we're passing it a pointer to an integer array by reference. We're also passing it the old size and the new size. We're passing those by constant value. We'll get to that in a moment. And then inside of this array, we do just what we did before. We declare a temporary array. We reallocate it to be the new size. We copy our old array into our new array from the old size of the array. We delete our old array. We delete the memory that was allocated to the old array. Then we reset that old array pointer to point to this new array. So that we're actually changing the pointer value. And then we're going to reset the temporary array to null here. Okay? So this is what we end up with at that point. If this is our original array, we delete it. We return this memory to the heap. After we copy its contents over in here, okay, after the copy command copies its values over, and then we retarget it to point to this new one, and then we get rid of the, we null out the temporary array value. And then when this function returns, that original array pointer is now pointing to a much larger array. The array has just magically grown in size. You're going to have to do that on your next program, and here's the exact way you'll do it, okay? I've got a bad habit of saying, okay. I got it from an old calculus professor of mine who always used to stand up there in front of the board with all the hairy advanced calculus equations on the blackboard going, you see, okay, okay. I'd be sitting back there going, What? Unfortunately, as I listen to these recordings, I sound like the shop teacher or Mr. Mackey off of South Park. I want to sound more like the shop teacher. Yes, kids will never learn to fuck. Never mind. Anyway. This is what you're going to have to do on the next program. Now, there's a question here in the code. Is this last statement necessary? Is it or is it not necessary, that last statement? It's not really necessary. Why? Because when the function finishes execution, temporary array will go away, right? But we just do it to be safe. Question? Because I'm not assigning what they point to, I'm assigning the pointer.
Okay.
When I dereference a pointer, I'm referring to what it's pointing to. When I don't dereference it with the asterisk, I'm referring to the actual pointer, to the address stored in the pointer. So in this, the address stored in array before that assignment would be the address pointing over here to the old array. Okay? I then delete that, which makes this address basically garbage. It's undefined in there. And then when I set it to temp array, I'm now setting it to have the same value as temp array, which is the address of this new array that I allocated. Okay? That's an important difference. Other questions? Yes?
Can you tell me the advantages
between subs or subs? Yes, I can. And I will, but not right now. We'll get to that in just a second. It's coming. It's coming up here on the next slide or two. Alright? Here's the copy command. We can also pass pointers by value. Here's the copy function. If we only need to modify the value of the target, or we only need to modify what the pointer is pointing to, but not the actual pointer itself, not the actual value stored in the pointer. If we only need to be able to store what the pointer is pointing to, then we could pass it by value, which is what's done here. We're passing in the target and the source pointers to the two arrays by value here. And then we just got a little for loop that goes through. Now, and we're setting the target, you know, we're just copying over the array positions here. Now, we're actually, the target and source, the values that are stored in there, are copies of the actual parameter values, which were temp array and array that was in the call. Same as when you have a copy of a value of a simple variable. We have copies of it, but we can dereference those copies to get to the same location out in memory as the actual parameter pointers. That allows us to basically change what the pointer's pointing to. If I was to reassign, like right here after the for loop, if after the for loop, before I return, if I was to say source equals target, okay, if I now say source equals target, which is sort of what I want to do later on after the call, right? Would that be if in the copy function after the for loop, if I say source equals target, does that mean that I can omit this statement down here where I say array equals temp array? Huh? No. Why? I would be changing the copy pointers. I'd be changing the copies of the pointers. I would not be changing the actual parameter pointers. Okay? If I change the value in the copy function of target and source, not what they point to, but if I change their actual values, doesn't have any effect on the actual parameters they correspond to because they are copies. They were passed by value. Okay? No different from what you previously learned. However, this is actually termed a side effect. Why is it termed side effect? Well, with normal variables, with non-pointer variables, when you pass it by value, you can't then change the actual parameter. You're basically indicating that you're passing it by value because you're not going to change the actual value of the parameter. In a sense, even though we're not able to change the actual pointer, we're changing what it points to, which is very close in terms of effect of changing the actual pointer. And for that reason, it's termed a side effect, and it's not really considered good practice. It would be better here to make, in this case, in the copy, to either pass these pointers by reference, in a sense indicating that we might not only change the pointers, but we actually will be changing also possibly what they point to. What would actually be even better would be to pass the pointer by constant, but not the target. Pass them as constant pointers to malleable or mutable targets. We're going to get to that here in just a second. We can use the constant modifier. We can use the constant modifier, and we can either put it in front of parameters, pointer parameters in front of the type, or we can put it between the asterisk and the identifier. There's a difference. When we put it in front of the parameter name here, we're indicating that this is a constant pointer. When we put it in front of the type, we're indicating that what it points to is constant. We're indicating that this is a constant target, this is a constant pointer. Slight difference. We're going to spend some time on this today. Here on the next slide, 320. Passing a pointer by value is a little bit dangerous because of this side effect. Because you're passing the pointer by value, you're really sort of indicating that I can't change the pointer, but I can still change what it points to. And you're not really indicating to the person that's using the function what you're going to do. It's kind of left up in the air, and that's not a good way to program. So what we do really is we want to pass a pointer to a function and be able to restrict it from modifying what the pointer points to. We can do that by using the constant modifier. If we precede a pointer parameter by the constant right here, in this case in the print function, that indicates that the target of the pointer, or what the pointer is pointing to, can't be modified. So in this function above, print cannot actually change anything in the array. And if the print function does try and change something that's in the array, if down here in the print function, if I had something like array sub 0 equals 5, if I put that statement in there, the compiler would flag it. The compiler would flag it with some error message, attempt to dereference, or attempt to modify constant target pointer. It would give me some kind of error message like that, telling me that it's telling me, wait a minute, you said in the heading that you weren't going to be changing the target, and here you are trying to change what that pointer points to. Make up your mind, because I'm not going to let you do it both ways. You either have to tell me one way or the other, but be consistent. That helps us find what otherwise might be really tough logic errors in our code if we couldn't do this. And in this case, this parameter here in print is actually, the array parameter is being passed by, it's a constant target value pointer parameter. Alright? So in other words, the pointer is being passed by value, so I get a copy of the pointer. So I can't really modify the real pointer that was the actual pointer that was passed into it. And since the target's constant, I can't go through this copy to change what it points to. Well, there's also an extension to this that says that we can, besides having pointers to constant targets, we can also have constant pointers. We can pass pointers so that they can't be changed, so that the value that's in the pointer cannot be changed. Since const int star pointer means that the target is constant, we specify that the pointer itself is constant by saying int star const I pointer. In this case, and we allocate a new array here on slide 321, that tells us that the target can be changed. There's no const in front of the int, so the target can be changed, which makes sense because we want to be able to change the contents of the array. The contents of what the pointer is pointing to can be changed, but the pointer itself cannot be changed. In a sense, this is the way regular arrays are treated. Regular arrays, if instead of saying int star const I pointer, if I had just said I pointer sub 42, okay? If I just said int I pointer sub 42, that would be essentially equivalent to doing what I've done up there. Array pointers are, by default, treated as constant pointers. You can't change them to point to somewhere else. You can change what they point to. Their target can be changed, but you cannot change the pointer, the value of the array pointer. So in this case, given that declaration above, if I said star I pointer equals 17, that's legal. By default, I pointer points to what array position? The zeroth position. So I would be changing storing in the zeroth position of the array, I'd be storing 17. That's okay. I'm changing what the pointer points to. I'm dereferencing it to get to what it points to. However, if I declared another integer here, and I tried to change the pointer's value to be equal to the address of some other integer, the compiler will flag that as an error. I'm trying to now change the value that's stored in that pointer, which I defined as constant above. Putting these two things together, besides having constant targets, besides having constant pointers, we can combine them to have a constant pointer to a constant target. There's a quick, little, easy way of remembering this, of figuring it out, and that's to read it not left to right, but right to left in terms of applying the const. If you read it right to left, you got, okay, C pointer is a constant pointer, constant star. So that means this const applies to this star, so that means it's a constant pointer to an integer, which is const. Okay? Kind of read it right to left, it works out a little bit better. Somebody had a question here. Yes?
One of the same ways that last one is, do I have like const after the function parameters for the applying to the whole function?
Oh. No. You're talking about constant member functions in terms of classes. Right? That's what you're referring to, I assume. How after a member function, we can declare that member function to be constant, right? That means that we can't change any of the parameters. Now, in a sense, have we talked about the this pointer yet? No? Well, we will. We'll get to it then, okay? I won't let me jump ahead at the moment. It has a relationship to this, and I'll explain that when we get there. So, to sum this up, here's a little slide 322, which kind of combines all this together here. I've got this function F1, and I'm passing it a character pointer P. How am I passing that pointer? That pointer is being passed by value. Okay? So that means I can change its target, or I can change the value of P, even though I'm changing the copy of the pointer. Well, inside of this function, then, if I declare character S, char S to be an array of characters, that makes it basically a constant pointer to a malleable target. If I then set PC star car const equal to S, now that makes PC a pointer to a constant character. The PC is not a constant pointer, but it's a pointer to a constant target. Which means if I say PC sub 3 equals G, nope, I'm trying to change what it's pointing to. I'm trying to change its target. I can't do that. That gets flagged as an error. But if I say PC equals C from where it was pointing at F, that's fine. The pointer is not constant. Its target is. And then down below that, if I define CP to be a constant pointer, CP is is character star const. That makes it a constant pointer to a. That makes it a constant pointer to a malleable target. So that means then if I say CP sub 3 equals G, that's fine. I can change its target. But if I say CP equals P, no, now I'm trying to change the value of that pointer, which here I've declared, whoops, which I can't reach high enough, which I declared to be constant. And finally, here at the end, I can declare CPC as a constant pointer to a character which is constant. It's both a constant pointer to a constant target. So that means I can't change what it's pointing to, and I can't change the pointer itself. Both of those give me an error. So, what this tells you is that from now on, when you're passing pointers, you need to decide, when you're passing them between functions, you need to decide how you're going to use it in that other function. Do you need to change? Do you need to be able to not change anything? Do you need to be able to not, do you not need to change the pointer? Do you not need to change its target? If that's true, then you pass it as a constant pointer to a constant target in terms of the parameter. You define it that way in your function prototype, in your function heading. If you need to be able to change what the pointer is pointing to, but not the pointer itself in the function, then you pass, if you need to be able to change what it's pointing to, you pass it as a constant pointer. That way you can change its target. And if you only need to be able to change the pointer, but not what it's pointing to, then you pass it as a pointer to a const. Okay? Clear as mud, right? You can, by the same token, apply const to other things. We can apply const. It's why, in a sense, for those of you who took 1044, when you took 1044 and you were told when passing arrays, arrays by default are always passed by reference, right? However, if you're not going to change the array in a function when you pass it, what do you put in front of the array? Const. So in a sense, you're passing it now by constant reference, which tells you that you can't change it. What it's pointing to. So you've already been using this, whether you realized it or not. It just gets a little bit more complicated with pointers. Not that much more complicated, okay? It's not that much more complicated. And it gives us a lot of power as programmers, though. because we can tell the compiler exactly how we intend to use it, and if we make a mistake, the compiler will catch it for us. Otherwise, without this, we can only tell the we can only communicate to the compiler approximately how we're going to use it, and if we screw it up, the compiler may not catch it, and it may turn it into a logic error that is really difficult to find. This is a safe way to pass parameters. Okay. Question?
If you just have the pointer as a constant,
like the target
as a constant,
okay, I don't have the pointer as a constant, but I have the target
you
as a constant.
Like star,
okay, so I've got a pointer to a constant target.
Mm-hmm. If you change the pointer, then would there be a way to get back the stuff that it was originally pointing to?
Not unless you save that location in another pointer before you change it.
Okay.
We'll get to that in just a little bit, okay? That's one of the things we have to guard against in using pointers. Here on the next slide, we're going to discuss briefly here this idea of pointer arithmetic. As if we didn't have enough power with pointers to hang ourselves already, the language gives us a little bit more power. We can actually do arithmetic on pointers. If here I've got a little character array F, which has stored in it G0RM, norm. I think Mr. McLean did this at the time when they were doing the special last year on Gorman gas, the Melvin Peak parody of the British aristocracy. Some of you have probably never read it. Don't worry. It's not really that good of a series anyway. Anyway, we've got P here, which is a character pointer, and it points to F. Now we've got a for loop here, which goes from 0 to the string length of F. Now that's actually the old C-style string function from C-string. But that basically will give it has four characters in it, and that'll return back a 4. So that goes from 0 to 4. We have IDX++ and T++. And inside of here, we output IDX, the index, and we output star P. The first time, star P is pointing at the same place S is, which is the zeroth element, right? It's the zeroth element, so it outputs the G. The next time, then P gets added, one added to it. Then it outputs the O, the R, and the M. The question here is, why does this incrementing cause P to step through the characters of the array one by one? They're stored in sequential areas of memory, and the compiler knows to increment P to the next location's memory in the array. We'll talk about how it knows that in just a moment. It's not really any big trick. Could I, in that little for loop there, do I merely need P? Could I replace P by S so that I could say C out whatever star S and then S++? Could I use S instead of using P?
No.
No? Why? S is an array, but aren't arrays pointers? It's a constant what? It's a constant pointer, which means I can't, remember I said by the arrays are constant pointers, not targets, not pointers to constant targets, but constant pointers. You can't change their address. And you can't add, so you can't do arithmetic upon their addresses. You can copy their address into a non-constant pointer, which P is in this case, and do arithmetic on that, which is very useful. When you increment a pointer by using the addition operators and the increment operators, P equals what? No, you can't. If you say P equals zero, that's the same as saying P equals null. You can say P equals F again after the loop to get it back pointing to the beginning of the array. The results of applying those pointers depends upon what the pointer is pointing to, what's stored in the array. Basically, when you apply an arithmetic operator to a pointer that points to some type, we'll call it P. That means that P then is of type P asterisk. That's its type. That's the type of the pointer. That means then that basically when you add one to it or you subtract one to it, it sets P to be equal to the next element or the previous element. And the reason for that is that the integer value of P plus 1 will be size of P larger than the integer value of P. Basically, there is built into the language this size of function. Of course, the compilers provide it, so they certainly have access to it. The size of function takes a type as its parameter, and it tells you, it returns back the number of bytes that's necessary to store an element or an object of that type. And so when you are adding 1 to a pointer, it figures out to see what it points to, it figures out the size of that type, and it adds in the size to the current pointer value. That's why it increments it. Here, you can see we've got an integer array now rather than a character array. And we go down through here and we set our integer pointer to be equal to the array. And then we output here, we output K, the address that's stored in the pointer, and then what the pointer is pointing to. And here's the contents of the array. And then we increment I pointer. Here's the output that we get from that. The first column here gives us the value of K, 0 through 4. Then we get the address of I pointer each time through the loop. And then we get the contents of what it's pointing to, which are just the values in the array. The question here is, why does this output of these addresses make sense? Because the size of the integers on most, not all, but on most machines today. Most machines today implement the IEEE 32-bit arithmetic standard, blah, 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 which means that an integer uses 4 bytes. Okay? Uses 4 bytes. 4 bytes. So that's why these things are output, of course, in hexadecimal, and that's why this goes up by 4 each time. 0 plus 4 plus 4 plus 4 is actually 12 in base 16, and 12 is represented with a C. 12 plus 4 more would be 16, but 16 is 0, and it increments the next position by 1. Okay? That's why that makes sense. You might wonder why we do pointer arithmetic. Why do we even bother with it? It looks like it's fairly complex, and that really just about anything that we can do with pointer arithmetic, we can just as well do by indexing using the brackets of the array. We can do it by indexing. So why do we use pointer arithmetic? Well, it turns out, I almost hesitate to tell you this, it turns out that the compiler, if you have 2 sets of code that's working with some arrays, and they're doing exactly the same thing, except one program is doing it by using the brackets, the index operators. And the other program is doing it all through pointer arithmetic computation. They are equivalent programs in terms of what they do. They're equivalent programs in terms of the memory that they manipulate in the content. The only difference, let's say, is in the way that they're computing where that memory is at, because one of them is using the bracket index subscript operators, and the other one is using pointer arithmetic. It turns out that most compilers will generate slightly more efficient machine code for the pointer arithmetic version of the program than the array indexing part of the program. And the compiler itself will take less time to compile to translate the pointer arithmetic version than the array subscripting index version. Now, to explain why that's true, I'd have to teach you how compilers generate code. And I don't have time to do that. It's a little bit beyond you at the moment. You will eventually get to that if you wish to. If you wish to, there's a couple courses you can take as juniors and seniors in formal language theory and compiler theory, where you get to write your own compiler. Okay? You see? You can get some new ones. They're actually interesting courses. They will teach you a lot about what happens inside the machine. Here on slide 325 is a little bit of a discussion of arrays of structures, pointers. We can declare, here we've got a structure called complex. We declare an array of complex structures here in C array, and then we set I pointer or C pointer equal to that array. It's a pointer to a complex structure, so we can set it equal to that array. We can then, if we output the address of C pointer, that might come out like this. Then if we add one to it and we output it, it might come out like that. Why do you think that's true? Why do we get that increment?
Well, the
doubles are 8 bytes, and we've got two of them. Okay? And in hexadecimal, 2/8 is 1/16, which means we increment the 16th position. Be careful with pointer arithmetic code. It's tricky. It can be very tough to decipher. And let's face it, that's why they call it code, right? And it only makes sense if the target of the pointer is an array. If you set a pointer to point to something that's not an array, and you do pointer arithmetic to it, you might as well be smoking while you're putting gas in your car. How many of you have ever seen somebody do that? I usually drive on by. When I drive up and I see them doing that, I usually drive on by. I'll get gas later, thank you. Okay. I'd prefer not to associate with idiots. So here we've got double X and star double, which points to it. We output the value of the pointer and what it points to. That's perfectly fine. That would be the same as outputting the address of X and X. That would be the same result. If in those first two cout statements, if I said output ampersand X and X, I'd get the same thing. Then I increment the pointer and I output it again. Well, as you suspect, its address goes up by 8 because it's a double, which takes 8 bytes. But now here's what I get. I get a very small, infinitesimally small number. Okay? Why? It's what happens to be out there in memory. who knows what's out there, but that's what happens to be out there. And if we force the compiler to interpret that next memory location, whatever it is, as a double, this is the value that it comes up with treating it as a double. In reality, it might be characters that's out there. Who knows?
Absolutely.
As soon as you generate an address that's outside the memory that has been allocated to your program, what will pop up on the screen? A dialog box that says access violation. Okay, your program will be shut down. Right? Unless you're really devious about how you're doing it. You do it in such a way that the operating system can't catch it. But you better be really devious. You better be real devious. Because operating systems are written by some fairly smart people, and they spend a lot of their time sitting around going, now what might this devious SOB try next, okay? And they get paid for sitting around trying to stop people from doing that kind of stuff. Hold on here, I've got one more slide. Three more slides. All right, I see what. We'll stop here. We'll pick up with this on Thursday.